The Critics with Chairman Reg Neal. The Critics with Chairman Reg Neal.
Below last year's level of about 33,000 bales. To end the news, here are the main points again. Hundreds of people reported to have been detained in Laos as the pro-communist Pathet Lao begins a cultural revolution. Peking Radio says demonstrations last week in support of the former Chinese vice premier, Mr. Deng Xiaoping, claimed one life in...
We are happy to have Mr. Murray Fleming, the secretary of the Richmond Football Club, with us in the studio this evening. Murray, how long have you had this job?
Well, I've been in the 14th year, as a matter of fact. 8 years and a half as honorary secretary, and getting on to 5 years for the full-time work.
Now, the 1953 season, of course, is now underway, and we'd like to hear how the Richmond team is likely to fare this season.
Well, we're very happy this year with the material which is offering, and the improvement in the players who were with us in 1952. We are fortunate in having secured the services of quite a number of talented recruits from the country and from our own local junior teams, and the improvement, fortunately for us, in number of last year's players has been remarkable. And one good thing about it, I would say, that is the youth of the side. The oldest player in our side is 28 years of age, and that tends naturally to enable team balance to be comprised of young uppers around the club who have a future for not 5 or 6 years, but for 10 years.
That's really
for 10 years.
That's really
for 10 years.
That's really
for 10 years.
That's really true. I notice you've brought one of the new boys along with you this evening.
Yes, as a matter of fact, we have Bill Green, who played centre-back. We have Bill Green, who played centre-back. We have Bill Green, who came on last Saturday.
Well, Bill, how did you feel for your opening game in the big league?
Well, as every player knows, it's just what a country lad strives for, the big time. Country lad strives for the big, they call it, but when you first run onto the field, it's the roar of the crowd, or it's the riveting experience, unnerving experience. But get playing with your teammates, you soon settle. I think it's worth it for a footballer.
You forget after a while that the big team of 20, 30,000 people are driving this way.
Bill comes from Hayfield, a town in Gippsland, and I would like to say this too, particularly the country clubs, we're most grateful for their cooperation in securing services of players of his kind. Gives the lads an opportunity of doing well in the city, not only in football, but in employment, and also in a new environment, and I think gives them a greater outlook on life.
It certainly does. And I suppose now the season is underway. Most people, the season is underway. Perhaps just beginning, but perhaps you've got a different idea.
Yes, as a matter of fact, our busiest period is from the middle of January until the opening day. We have to cull out from a number of about 200 recruits named who have been sent to us the prospects of each of the boys, the positions they play, their age, and in this case, in my instance, one was recommended from the team in the Riverina. We checked on his age and we found he was 31 years of age.
Well, that's a bit too old for the big game, isn't it?
Well, much too old. As a matter of fact, most of our fellows are retiring these days or taking coaching jobs at 29 to 30 years.
That's so, yes. Now, in relation to ground improvements, Murray, I think you've come to tell us about that.
Yes, at last.
Yes,
at last. Something is being done for the pavement in the outer ground. That Stoic, who has stood for many years in the rain and all kinds of weather, hoping to see his side win, and as on Saturday, in that rain which commenced around the quarter time period, staying right till the finish. We have not yet. We have not yet. We have not yet. Gentlemen, it's going to be some years before we can do so. Years before we can do so. Years before we can do so. Management committee, in cooperation with the football club, have terraced section of the outer ground, enabling the people at least to stand and not slide about when it is raining. About when it is raining. About when it have a reasonable degree of comfort in watching the game, but we will not be happy until we are able to completely enclose, as the Melbourne ground has been enclosed, the complete outer, to enable people to see the game in a degree of comfort and out of the wet weather.
Yeah, I suppose you already spent quite a considerable sum on those improvements, Murray.
Yes, on the outer ground alone, so far we have spent £6,000. This money has come from the patrons of the outer grounds themselves. They have put tuppence in to a pool from every attendance they have paid in this past 5 or 6 years. That money is now spent to their advantage. They have put tuppence in to a pool from every attendance they have paid in this past 5 or 6 years. That money is now spent to their advantage. We are not allowed to touch it for any other purposes.
No, that's true. And I presume that the other clubs as well are making plans for the comfort of the outer patrons as well.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I feel that every club is with Richmond and the Victorian Football League and Grounds Management Association in desiring to improve the conveniences for the patrons. After all, if you give them comfort as they do at Melbourne, well, at the Melbourne Cricket Ground, you find that you're going to get greater attendances. We believe this, that with the whole of the outer ground covered, which eventually must come,
yes,
that the attendance would rise considerably.
Yes, well now, that sounds very good for the outer ground patrons. Now perhaps just to finish this little interview, you might tell us just what the football patrons are in for this season.
Well, I would say the greatest season in football, and I really mean that. I would say that the standard of the player of our game, Richmond versus Melbourne on Saturday last, augurs well for a most successful season for both teams, and I feel certain, according to the press, that the standard at the other ground so early in the season has made it that I feel 1953 can be looked forward to a record season. We hope that naturally the Tigers, after being 6 years out of the final series, will make the final four. That's my greatest wish. We don't mind if we don't win a premiership, because we know the battle we'll have. But if we can make the final four under our new coach, Albie Panham, following that great player, Captain Blood, Jack Dyer, and I feel confident of this, our patrons will be well satisfied.
Well, thank you very much, Murray, and I feel sure, too, that the particularly the Richmond followers will endorse what you've said, and I feel sure that all football people in general will wish you well and your club. And we thank you for coming along this evening. And to you, thank you too, Bill Green.
Thank you very much, Sam.
John, what were your main impressions of the 1952 Olympic Games in Helsinki?
Well, I would say the thing that impressed me most was the efficiency with which the Finns ran the games. They put on an excellent spectacle, which was a first-class show from the point of view of the spectator and the pressman and the athlete alike. I think everybody felt that after the games that they had never competed or witnessed a greater sporting spectacle.
Did you find the atmosphere very different to other athletic meetings?
Yes, the atmosphere is very tense from the competitor's point of view, very interesting from the spectator's point of view. Every heat, every semi-final is very, very closely contested. In fact, a heat may very well be the hardest race you'll ever run. You've got to qualify, and they're very cutthroat, fierce competition, and you can't afford to be dallying at any stage.
John, have you decided to concentrate on any particular events at the Melbourne Games?
Yes, I would like to run both the 5,000 metres and the 1,500 metres. The difficulty is whether I could undertake both of these races. Each of the races has a heat and so it would involve running a total of 4 races in about 5 days. This, of course, can be done. It depends on the speed with which you run the 4 races, and also, of course, your own physical condition. My problem, of course, will be to decide whether I'm capable of doing justice to myself in both events under these circumstances. My decision will be made after our Olympic trials here on October the 13th and the 20th, if I run well on both occasions and am able to come up on the second occasion feeling fit and strong, well then I'll be tempted to try and run both. That's, of course, if I qualify for both. I mean, conditions even out here of competition are such that it would be quite possible for me to fail to qualify in either of those events for our own team. But if I don't, well then I'll select the better of those two events. The event in which I show out best, well, I'll run that only.
Well, who do you consider will be your most formidable rivals in those races?
Well, it's a matter of rivals rather than rival, because it's a number of runners in each event. I would think that there are 8 or 9 men in both the 1500 and the 5000 metres who would have an excellent chance of winning. There are another half dozen or so whose names are more obscure, perhaps less well known, but who also must be given a chance, because outsiders have a habit of winning Olympic titles. In the 1500 metres in Helsinki in 1952, a fellow from Luxembourg by the name of Josie Bartel won the event, and yet the most optimistic of his supporters could hardly have expected him to gain a place, and yet he was able not only to win the event but to create an Olympic record and to remain unbeaten in about 10 more races that season. This has happened before and it's likely to happen again. In the 1500 metres, on present form, the runners with the best chances are Delaney of Ireland, Nielsen of Denmark, Rosavalli and Tabori of Hungary, Ewson and Wood of England, and Bailey of Australia, Lincoln perhaps of Australia, and also runner. And in the 5000 metres, the runners with the best chance are mainly Europeans and Englishmen. The Englishmen have 3 very fine runners in Pirri, Ibbotson and Chataway, all 3 of which could possibly fill the places. And then the Hungarian Harris, and the New Zealander Bailey, and perhaps Holberg too. And then there's Stevens and the Russian Cuts. They must all be given excellent chances of winning that event. I'd hope to have some hope myself, of course, as well.
Trophy, no, first to get away was Whittaker. Trophy followed by Baldwin and Alden. Hammond is in the picture. And with about 50 yards to go, it's anybody's race. Arnold fighting on. And we find Baldwin will go on, and I think he will beat Arnold or Chris Lambert. That would be the placing. Well, this boy has won it. The second lad in succession from Broken Hill. And he was confident, as he told you, that he'd run it through, and I think he was the popular selection. Well, his trainer has gone round to him, and they're hugging him. It's not often done on the Bendigo track, and we feel that he's coming to the microphone straight away. Mr. Albert Matthews is bringing him here. Well, it's a great victory, and here he comes in great style. Well, thank you, Albert, for bringing the young man across. We'll just wait for the moment while he gets a breath or two. And he's receiving congratulations from everyone. His photograph being taken. And you know, when we brought him to the microphone after he won the semi-final, he did feel very confident that he'd come through and win. Well, he lived up to it, the redhead. They all do that. Well, Sam, it's a great moment for you. Congratulations from all of us and all sportsmen in Australia. And how they'll be cheering in Broken Hill this afternoon. Well, what would you like to say?
I'm going to... Not much to say there.
Well, when did you seriously start to set yourself for this race?
5 years ago.
And how old were you then? Who took you in hand?
Mr. Ellis.
And you'd like to pay a tribute to your trainer?
Yeah, could I get him to say a few words?
We're going to get him in a second. I'm going to ask you, did you feel confident success from the time the handicaps came out?
Oh, yes.
Had you had a run-up with J.A. Cairn, who won the Stalgift last year? Oh, you hadn't in any way at all?
No.
Well, have you had any other important successes?
No, only ones. Three small ones in 9, about 4 years ago.
And, son, regarding diet, have you any set plan?
No diet at all. Just eat normally and dry out, that's all.
Well, when did you have a meal today, your last meal?
At 11 o'clock.
And what did you have?
Grilled steak.
Well, there you are. Now, no doubt you'll run at school at Easter?
Yes, I'll be there.
And no special training methods from Miss Ellis?
No special.
Well, would you like to say a word to the Mother Brogan? Would you like to say a word to the Mother Brogan? Would you like to say a word to the Mother Brogan? Would you like to say a word to the Mother Brogan?
Hello, Brogan Hill. Hey, Mum. Hey, Dad. And 7 brothers. How are you?
Well, all the very best. Thank you kindly indeed. And where's Mr. Ellis? Is he here? Mr. Ellis there? I think the young fellow's broken down. It's been a very stirring moment for him. And he's really upset at his success. But it was a... We wish that, but it was a... We wish that, but it was a... We wish that, but it was a... We wish that. He's really upset at his success. 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 Him, the very best, and him, the very best, and him before him. And he's really... Well, he defeated. And to the lad, have your turn. And may you have your turn. And may you have your turn. And may you have told you, as we told you. Bill, that's nice. What do you think of that boy? He's a lovely lad, isn't he?
Well, he's a very good runner, as far as I'm concerned.
And when did you know that he could run?
Oh, 5 years ago.
And how have you put him through it all the time?
Well, he's just
fine.
Well, he's just
fine.
Well, he's just
fine.
Well, he's just
fine.
Well, he's just hogging some long work early, hogging some long, plenty of run throughs.
And how did you pick him to be a good runner?
I just seen him as a schoolboy. Practically just left school.
And you've had him ever since?
He was 17 since he was 17.
Clean living lad, isn't he? I thought he looked most confident when he came down with the other finalists to run through there.
He had the race won before he went out.
And how did he settle himself over the weekend? It wasn't too big for him or anything? Was he all right?
It never worried him. We left home Saturday singing. We left home today singing.
Well, you'll still be singing when you get back. Good luck, Dad, and may you train him any more winners.
Cheerio to Brogan Hill, to Kate, John, all the boys in the boiler shop, and North boys in the boiler shop, and North boys in the boiler shop, and North Brogan Hill staff, Mr. and Mrs. Ballin. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You can give the full plow. You can give the full plow. Time.
Thank you.
Now I know you can give the... The full plow.
Mr. and Mrs. Ballin. Thank you. Thank you.
Now I know you can give the full place in some time. Well, when did you have...
11 o'clock.
And what... Mother Brogan. Would you like to say a word to the Mother Brogan?
Dad.
Mr. Ellis, is he here?
And 7 brothers, how are you?
Well, all the very best. Thank you kindly indeed. And where's Mr. Ellis? Is he here? Mr. Ellis there? I think the young fellow's broken down. It's been a very stirring... It's been a... And a moment for him. And he's really upset at his success. He's really upset at his success. Him, the very best. And to the lads that he defeated. And to the lads that he defeated. We say good luck. We'll have your turn. And may you have a winner very soon. Now the winner, very soon. Now the winner, as we told you, as we told you. Bill, that's nice. What do you think of that boy? And when did you know that he could run?
and there is... Are you ready? And there is the gun, and the head of the river race for 1951 is underway, and I'm happy to report a very excellent start was effected. This is a matter of great congratulations. It is very fine for sportsmen of any athletic prowess to have the advantage of an excellent start, as these crews were given here this afternoon. And with the flurry and the scurry of the early high rate of striking, I notice now that Scots College have gone out in the first 100 yards to a lead of approximately a quarter of a length over Wesley College, and Wesley College and Xavier are rowing neck and neck together. The crews have travelled about 150 yards. The crews have travelled about 100 crews, and the Scots are maintaining that advantage. Wesley are forging up to them. Xavier at the moment are dropping a little back. The rate of stroking has now settled roking. Driven by the exhibition of rowing has been given by the exhibition of rowing has been given by the exhibition crew. The people that these editors are getting the distance up to the head of the field, to the distance up to the quarter mile post. Wesley and Grimley lead quarter mile post. Wesley to a half a length behind them, to a half a length behind them in second position, quarters of a length. May go ahead of me. The excellence ahead of me. The excellence. A lot depends on afternoon. A lot depends on the approach to the rudder. And any excess use of the rudder. Congratulating others. Now maintained that lead. There are good lengths, I would say now. Out of my range of vision. They are now further back. And a quarter of a length further back. And as they are now passing out of my range of vision, Harold Belson in the centre position will give you Harold Belson in the position of and so I'll pass over.
Their hands, their blade work, their leg drive and their body work is an example of nice. Have set out to chase Scotch. Xavier would be about 2.5 lengths further behind the leaders. At the moment, as they pass up towards the end of the last percentage, and answer the challenge that Wesley threw out, and they've gone further ahead. They're now entering on the last quarter of a mile, and Scotch undoubtedly have a winning advantage at this stage. As a matter of fact, it could very well be said that that barring accidents, Scotch are now the winners. They're easily the best Scotch College crew that I've seen since the war, and probably one of the best in the last 20 years. Now, as they're approaching the finish, I think it's Basil Coningsby's turn to take over. Can you take it, Basil?
Thank you, Harold. And now as the crews race about 400 yards from the finish, Scotch College run with great confidence dash are running along, as Harold has already told you, look all over winners. But Wesley College are not to be denied, and here on the north bank are putting in a great challenge to Scotch. They have outdistanced Xavier, who've dropped right out of calculations altogether. Now Scotch racing on with about 300 yards to go, striking about 35, 36 strokes per minute, and the water being a little bit dirty, they're clearing it in excellent style, showing good watermanship. And Wesley striking about 35, going after Scotch, are about a length and a quarter behind. They're putting in a determined finish, but I'm afraid there isn't enough space left right, 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 there isn't enough space left past finishing Scotch. Scotch are giving a grand exhibition of rowing, and they're coming right away now as they near the winning post, about 150 yards to go. They're almost 2 lengths ahead of the very tired Wesley crew, who are starting to lose some of their form. Xavier College is about another 2.5 lengths further behind Wesley College. And rowing with great confidence, Scotch go over the line about 2 lengths from Wesley College, who are about another 2.5 lengths ahead of Xavier College. That was a...
this next number is designed to create a romantic atmosphere. It's been used in many films, and in fact, violinists in candlelit cafes throughout the world find it a great favorite. Here's Marchetti's Fascination.
Which should be a final song. It's called To the Ends of the Earth. To the end of the earth, the earth. How many of you remember Susan Heywood? Remember? I wonder how many of you remember Susan Heywood and Dana Andrews in that wonderful film, My Foolish Heart. It brings back very vivid memories to me. And now, finally, a song which should be a final song. It's called To the Ends of the Earth. To the end of the earth.
Next comes the newest work in this program, the second Mallarmé improvisation of Pierre Boulez. Boulez, who is 35 years old, is one of the most prominent musical figures of today. Significantly, he has won the admiration of another earlier innovator, Igor Stravinsky. Boulez, who studied in Paris with Olivier Messiaen, uses an advanced form of serial technique, in which not only the notes, but other elements, such as timbre, dynamics, nuance, as well as rhythms, are organized in series. Now, improvisation, of course, introduces an indeterminate element into music, and the very title of this work suggests a compromise between a rigid system of composition and spontaneous musical creation. In this improvisation, Boulez embeds the singing of an abstruse sonnet by the French symbolist Mallarmé within an exotic texture provided by 9 instrumentalists who play harp, bells, vibraphone, piano, celesta, and a great variety of percussion instruments. The effect is quite oriental. The poem, Une dentelle sabolie, which is sung by a soprano voice, springs from the poet's contemplation of a pair of lace curtains slightly parted before a window. Dorothy Dorrow is the singer in this performance of Pierre Boulez's improvisation on Mallarmé No. 2 by the New Music Ensemble, conductor John Carew.
The prince and the showgirl, the author and the newspaper seller, they could all end up in the one program in our People on Radio, 1:15 on Wednesdays on the First Network. It's in the afternoon, so stay awake. When a whole lot of people get together, well, anything can happen, and if it looks like being a bit of a fizz, then I'm there to stir things along a bit. This is Bob Sanders, and I talk to people from all walks of life on the new radio program, People on Radio, Wednesdays at 1:15 on the First Network. A whole lot of people get together. That's the start of it, you see. And then, well, anything can happen. And if things do look like being something of a fizz, then I'm there to stir things along a bit. This is Bob Sanders. I've been talking to people on television for a long time, and now it's radio for us. 1:15 on the First Network on the ABC, People on Radio, Wednesdays.
If you want to hear people in the news actually reporting about what they've seen and done, mixed into a programme of chat with famous people, an argument about topical matters, and if I work hard enough, and if we're lucky, well, we might get all these ingredients together into a programme called People on Radio, Wednesdays at 1:15 on the First Network. By the way, this is Bob Sanders, and I hope to join you on radio. On radio. I mean to shock you, you know, but it's London. I don't really mean to shock you, you know, but it's London to a brick, as they say, that you're going to be shocked sometime if you listen to the radio programme People on Radio. It's coming on at 1:15 on Wednesdays on the First Network on the ABC. And the reason I talk about being shocked, well, people are pretty shocking sometimes, and we report the truth on this programme. So I hope you can join me, Bob Sanders, on People on Radio on Wednesdays. Yeah. For 10 years now, I've been asked by people, where do you find the people you put on television? And now I suppose I'm going to be asked by people, where do you find the people you put on radio? Because we're starting a new radio programme called People on Radio. This is Bob Sanders. I'll be talking to them on the radio and on the television. And you might be one of them. But anyway, I hope you can join us 1:15 Wednesdays on the First Network.